We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome. Yeah, welcome to the KC Legends Show. We are live here at Hollywood Casino inside the Barstool Sportsbook. We'll be here every Monday night from 6 to 7, right up to kickoff on the Monday Night Showdown. What a great place to watch it. All kinds of fun stuff going on out here, always at Hollywood Casino. Come in the sportsbook and check it out. Kiosks everywhere to place your bets, throw down your parlays, look at the over-unders, look at the teasers. What a great place. What a great time. Bar. Gaming machines. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Got a lot to talk about. Joining me this week on the KC Legends Show is former wide receiver Mark Boerichter. Mark, welcome in.
What's up, Billy?
Are you a gambler?
I'm not.
No?
I'm really not, no.
See, I'm looking.
I haven't done – I need to download a few things on my phone. You know what I mean? Now that Kansas has this.
Now you need to figure it out.
Yes, you know what I'm saying, though? Like – I have not – I mean, I look at lines of games and different things like that, but I've never really been a gambler on anything like that.
So. You know, we haven't had any of the guys out here so far that are – I had J.C. Pearson out here, Tim Barnett. Nobody's a gambler. We had to take J.C. over to teach him how to use the kiosk, you know. I'm saying, I thought that was part – you're in sports radio. I mean, isn't that part of the sports radio guy to be that gambler and
I guess it
know
is.
The lines?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I look at the lines and different things like that. I haven't done anything since the state of Kansas got this, and I probably really should. You know what I mean? Because I'm not going to be a guy, because I'm not a gambler, really, that's going to be, like, throwing a bunch of money down anyway on things. But to have a rooting interest in some of these games,
yeah,
you know,
fun.
That aren't the Chiefs games or aren't, you know, you're not necessarily a fan of you're a fan of a certain school or something like that, it would be fun to do.
You should see all the parlays. They got some cool parlays. You throw down $5 or $10 and you can pick these parlays out, like four or five of them. You hit it, you win $400 or $500.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat stuff. It's a great place, a great atmosphere. So your first time out here, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
It is. This is cool. I was excited to come out here, excited you asked me to be on this here a couple weeks ago, and this is only going to get bigger and better. That's the other piece to this, right? Like, I see this. That's why I'm like, I probably do need to start getting into some stuff, because it's only going to get bigger and better.
You can imagine the energy coming out here with the big game on.
Oh, yes.
You know, with a couple of your buddies, three or four, having drinks, throwing down some bets, talking smack. Great place. Hey, guys, welcome in. Feel free to have some sunglasses and 810 koozies right there. Yeah, that's what we do here. All right, so yesterday, Mark, there's a lot to talk about. A lot to talk about. Obviously, a fantastic win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. What a way to bounce back from the dreadful loss in Indianapolis, where, you know, I told you last week after that loss, I sat here and said, hey, it was just one of those days. Don't put too much into it. People started picking apart this and that, and what about this and that. It was just one of those days. Just like last night was one of those nights.
Yeah.
From the on kickoff to the fumble to the touchdown early on, you knew it was on.
Yeah, the comparison between the 2 weeks is like light and dark, black and white, whatever you want to put it, right? Because I look at last week's game against the Colts was just kind of that blip on the radar screen, you know, that blip on the radar screen where – things didn't go right from the get-go for you, and then you just didn't play all that well overall, and it sneaks up on you because it's the National Football League. Those weeks happen.
Well, this team,
and I also think it was a look-ahead game, right? Like, you go and look at what happened last night. This team came out.
It appeared that way.
It sure did.
Maybe there wasn't as much time and emphasis on that Colts game as there was for the upcoming Tampa game.
Yeah, and even, you know, within the game plan and everything else that there was, the guys certainly seemed to be looking ahead to that next week, which was last night. And I know things started off really well for them, the fumble on the opening kickoff, but that set the tempo for the rest of the game, and I know it was a 10-point game at the end, which is still an absolute ass-kicking in the National Football League. It was not as close as the score appeared at the end.
No, it wasn't, and it really wouldn't have been if they didn't make that fumble in the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
You know, Brady looked unbelievable. Look at his numbers at the end of the night, too. And he did all that from the pocket.
Yeah.
He's always battling back, and it was interesting to see that go back and forth. A lot of things about this game. You know, you talk about the emotions of a player, and I say, and tell me your thoughts. Your schedule is so busy as a player. Mm-hmm. The demands on your time are so great from everything you're putting in at the stadium, watching film at home on your own, trying to mesh in your family, and maybe an appearance here or there or something. There's just, during the week, you're just looking for those couple hours where you can just exhale, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just say like, oh, man, just put your feet up and just relax and try to clear your mind for a little bit. And that's human nature. You're looking for those opportunities. I'm not saying that there was a bunch of time taken off for the Indianapolis game, but I do know I've played in games in that way, and we've got bit mm-hmm. by teams mm-hmm. of that caliber. Sometimes you just play down to the level, and then sometimes you play up to the level like they did last night.
Yeah, you do, and I don't think people realize how rigid our schedules used to be. You know, like you come in and you eat breakfast or you work out first, and you got meetings start, special team starts at 8, and then you go into team meeting at 9, and then it's, you know, you're bang, 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 back to back, out to practice, in for lunch, after practice meetings, you know, all that kind of stuff, and you're at the stadium till 5 o'clock at night, like, you know, a lot of times. And then you mentioned you're going home and doing extra work, you know, watching film at home, fitting in your family time there. You do look for an exhale in some capacity. And if every player tells you they're focused 100% of the time, all the time, is completely lying to you, because there are games when you look at the schedule and come through it and go, hey, it's not that you're taking that deep breath going, we got this one, right, type of thing. But you're like, hey, we are a better team than this team is. In Indy's case, they just lost to Jacksonville. You know, in a bad situation, like, you're like, okay, we'll get through this one. We know this is the next big one for us is the Sunday night game. And I think those guys kind of took an exhale, like, to your point, a week or so ago. And then they did play up to what they needed to play in the moment against a good team that you know, is now 2-2 in the Tampa Bay Bucks. But, you know, the other piece of this, I look at two Bill is like, you know, Tampa Bay – unfortunate situation with the hurricane down that direction, had to go to Miami, you know, which isn't that far from there, but they were displaced, you know, early in the week, so a lot of other distractions, and the Chiefs just took advantage of that.
And it's human nature. You try to look for situations to take a little pressure off yourself, and you feel that pressure inside, trust me. But when you put that pressure on you, that's when you respond. And talk about responding. Boy, everybody did in a lot of ways. You can talk about the running backs last night. You can talk about the unbelievable performance from Mahomes. You can talk about the defense stepping up and the way they played. Just everybody all around, the creativity on the offense, but the play calling. This team, it meant something to them to go back to Tampa Bay and face that demon and slay that dragon down there.
It certainly did, and I'm not a big believer – when you get into professional sports, that you're looking for the revenge game, right, or the payback type of game. But this, I think you put it correctly in the sense of, you said this demon, right? Mm-hmm. They go down to the Super Bowl, and they got embarrassed.
Yeah.
They got embarrassed against this Tampa Bay team in that Super Bowl. And so because of that, this was the first return trip back to it, first game against the Bucks, and the ability to do that. And so – you know, they were ready to go last night. They were ready to go. There was a different swagger about the team. There was a different attitude, and I know we'll probably get into this in a little bit, but the offensive line had a different attitude last night. And Andy Reid allowed them, and Eric Bieniemy allowed them to have that attitude. Because you know this, offensive linemen love to run the football. And when they start road grading you and getting 5-6 yards a shot, it's like, we're not throwing the ball anymore. Just keep feeding these guys, because we're doing some work up front, and they did last night.
They did. And you know, to continue on with that, as I watched the game, I paid particular notice to what was going on in the interior. And those guys, they moved the line of scrimmage. They were changing it. Mm-hmm. And when I, looking back, I remember that when watching the Super Bowl, it wasn't that way. As a matter of fact, it was Tampa that was changing the line of scrimmage defensively, pushing that offensive line back in the backfield all day, harassing Mahomes. That really wasn't the case, and especially in the run game. They got up on those guys, and they moved big bodies, pushing them downfield. There's no worse feeling than when – there is no worse feeling than when a man imposes his will on you and moves you backwards when you're supposed to be going forwards.
Yes. It's demoralizing. I know I played out wide, right? But I played an option offense in college, and – and there is no more demoralizing piece than if you're getting moved off the spot you're supposed to hold. And then to get that done to you continuously is the biggest thing.
Because you've got to go watch that film with your peers.
Yes.
And your coaching staff the next day. And that's really what occurred. And hats off to Trey and Creed and Tooney and those guys all the way across. They did an outstanding job. Now the man, number 15. Would you like to try to describe it?
I believe I described it to you earlier that he's an effing wizard, basically. I don't know how else to describe it. Like, the stuff that happens every single game, and, you know, you take the third down play out where he was getting tackled, spun around and threw, you know, kind of threw it up to Juju. The touchdown flick of the wrist to Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah.
Where when he was rolling out, when he slowed up, I was like, okay, he's going to – and he spun. I thought he was just going to take, like, three steps into the pylon, right, and for the touchdown, and all of a sudden he just flips it to him. But the things – those are all great and amazing plays, but he still amazes me on a weekly basis with the sidearm throws around windows that no other quarterback would throw.
The one to Kelce, I thought might have been his best throw of the night.
Yeah, and the one that – yeah, he's moving to his left, and it's a little seven-yard pass to Kelce. But you watch the end zone shot of it, and the D lineman or linebacker, whoever was right there, is still right in the way.
Right in the way. Throws it around his body.
He just threw it around him. And it was like, what is that? Like, you just don't see that happen. And then the other throw to Kelce was the one down the middle late in the game. I feel like it was fairly late in the game. I mean, early in the second half, where Kelsey's running a seam route, and he throws it down back shoulder to him, and Kelce makes a heck of a catch on it. But that's a great throw. And it looks off target, but that's where he was trying to put the ball. And those two are on the same page. But every week there's a sidearm throw around a defensive end to the running back or, like, to Kelce, and let alone, you know, the no-look passes he does from time to time. And it's just sorcery. It's just sorcery. And it's – at some point I'm worried about him having to get, like, Tommy John surgery or something, you know, because it's like a baseball player the way he's – and we all know he played baseball, all that kind of stuff. But just the different arm angles. And I think you're seeing – you know, some of these other young quarterbacks in the league as well, maybe not quite as dynamic as him, but the ability to make off-schedule throws, off-schedule plays, and keep plays alive. We used to always talk about those quarterbacks, oh, he's really mobile.
Right.
So he gets to keep plays alive and get outside the pocket, and maybe it's with your legs. But these young quarterbacks, and Mahomes specifically, can do so much of that it's a dual threat when he gets outside the pocket. He ran for a bunch of yards last night also on great plays, extending plays.
He's really – transcended the position.
Yes.
And I'm seeing other quarterbacks. The first one I saw try to emulate him was Aaron Rodgers. He was the very first one I saw. All of a sudden, he had a no-look pass. All of a sudden, he was slinging the ball sidearm. He didn't do those things before Patrick Mahomes came on board and started putting on this show. He added that to his repertoire. But I'm seeing it in college now. He's changed the position and the mentality of how to play it. And I'm seeing kids try to emulate what he's doing. It's amazing. And the thing about it is, to me, Mark, is 99% of other players or quarterbacks, or apply it to any position, when they're doing something, they make up their mind to do it. Like, talk about that play, the flip pass to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He scrambled out to his right. He turned around. He twisted. He could have – I thought, like you did, I thought he was going to lower his shoulder, plow for the pylon, and extend the ball. He leads – like most people would make a decision one way or the other what to do. He leaves everything open to whatever at the moment.
Yeah.
And has the wherewithal. Did you see the toe touch
yeah.
at the line of scrimmage,
yes.
him?
Yes.
He knew where the line of scrimmage was. He knew what was going on around him. He's got three big behemoths coming down on top of him, and he sees 25 covered in the end zone when he flips that ball.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's the mental capacity. Yep. Right? We talk about the physical side, yep, but the mental capacity.
That's my point.
And
yeah,
awareness of players. Yeah, yeah. It's just he's on another level there, too, because and you talk about these behemoths coming at him. You go back and watch that play when he does a little toe tap, right, stops to flick the ball. He's even moving his legs out of the way because there's a guy coming at his knees at the same time. And you just look at that and go, how did he process all this? And I know there's a still shot of this that I saw this morning of right as Mahomes is spinning, like Clyde Edwards-Helaire and somebody else are right, it might have been Kelce, like right in front with a defender, and it was like he threw a touchdown pass on this play to this guy, to Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
And it looks like there's no way it could happen.
It looks like there's no way in that situation it could have happened. It's just the overall field awareness, and no play is ever dead with him. That's the thing. No play is ever dead, which is why, you know, he wants to go for it at the end of the first half on all these games and different things. He is the aggressor. I've used this term with him a lot, that he is a greedy quarterback, and you want him to be a greedy quarterback.
Are you saying selfish like the Kansas City Star?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying greedy, that he wants to gobble up every single yard and score on every single play.
I'll
and
take
the hard
that
part
greedy
is you got to harness. Yeah, yeah, it's a great greedy
I'll
to
take
have.
That
That's
greedy.
What I'm saying.
I'll take that selfishness. Call it whatever you want, Kansas City Star. I'll take it. Keep giving it to us,
it's
right?
It's absolutely amazing.
All right, he's Mark Boerichter. This is the KC Legend Show. We are live at Hollywood Casino inside the Barstool Sportsbook. We're going to step away for a moment. We got a lot more to cover after this. All right, welcome back inside Hollywood Casino. And we are sitting here inside the Barstool Sportsbook. Come join us. All the kiosks are up. They're running. All the games are on. Getting ready for Monday Night Football. The bar is open. Lovely bartender. And joining me to my right here is former wide receiver Mark Boerichter joins the KC Legend. So, Mark, appreciate you here coming out here to Hollywood Casino and talking a little bit of the Chiefs with us and talking about the upcoming game here tonight. Let's get to go back. We talked about Patrick Mahomes for a bit. We talked about the offense, the spectacular things they did. We talked about the emotions of the game and as a professional athlete, how things can change between Indianapolis and hitting that low and then pulling it all together and laying it on the line for a big victory down in Tampa Bay. As a former wide receiver, let me ask you a question, as the big topic has been and through the offseason and still is, the story surrounding the wide receivers, the story about Tyreek Hill, the story about did the Chiefs win? Are they a better offense? Are they better in the future because of the draft choices they got from them? As we sit here today and you look at this wide receiving core and the way they're utilizing them, what do you see and what do you feel about these guys as a group?
Well, I said this before, when this trade happened, that, you know, sometimes you have to make decisions as an organization that are going to hurt you right now for the betterment and the future of your franchise. And Tyreek Hill is the most explosive wide receiver I've ever
Hands
seen
down.
To play the game.
Size-wise,
you know, for his size, everything. But they made a decision in a contract side of things that that needed to happen. And so they did that and got a tremendous return for him. Now, that being said, I think this receiving core as a whole is better than they've had here in previous years. And when I say that, I'm looking at like 2 through 5, right, on the team, because there is no other number one right now. Maybe Juju's the number one right now as you look at it. But 1 through 5 even collectively is better than what they were as a whole 1 through 5 before. They are deeper. They've got better overall athletes, I think. They're guys that have a little more size to themselves. And I think that's the portion to me right now as we sit here today, that this offense in this kind of bastardized West Coast offense that Andy Reid runs, there are a lot. There's a lot of fluidity to it. There's a lot of freeness to it. And, you know, Andy likes to say this a lot, like, let your personality show out there. He wants this offense to have personality. He doesn't want robots out there. The downside of that is sometimes there's too much of that freelance a little bit, right? And too many, hey, I can go this way on this route, mm-hmm. or I can go this way, or I can go this way. And you have to be on the same page with your quarterback. So I say that because you can do all these throwing sessions down in Texas. You can do your OTAs. You can have your training camp. And think you're on the same page until you get an actual game action. And when I say actual game action, and you know this, preseason is not actual game action.
No, it's not.
It's not game planned.
It used to be.
Yeah, it used to be. But it's not game planned, no. You know, and stuff. And so you're seeing different things. And so getting on that same page takes a little bit of time. I say all that because I see them starting to get on the same page. Last night was a spot where you saw – you know, Kelce and Mahomes are always going to have their connection. They've played with each other for a long time. But you're starting to see Juju Smith-Schuster come on a little bit. And I think it's about being more comfortable in the offense. Valdes-Scantlin is coming on a little bit. Mm-hmm. He almost had a touchdown last night. A lot of people think it was a drop, but that ball got deflected twice real quick before it got there. And it was an absolute bullet, by the way, that Mahomes threw. And Mecole Hardman's been banged up a little bit. He is who he is in terms of the player that he is. And, you know, Justin Watson's in the mix on that, too. I mean, you just have – you got a wide array of guys. They're using all their tight ends right now.
Yeah.
So when I say all that, you're never going to replace what Tyreek Hill brought to this offense. But the sum of all the parts is better. And as long as they continue to spread the football around, they're going to be just fine.
Am I right in saying that it makes Patrick have to think a little bit more?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I've said this on this piece, described it this way, that – it's making him play within the structure of the offense a little bit more, like he did early on in his career. I think over the last couple of years, you know, a lot was made of the two-shell defense last year, mm-hmm, right, and mm-hmm. taking away the deep shot. Yeah, there was things to that, but there are cover two beaters in right. this league. They ran some last night. But I think he got a little too zeroed in sometimes on trying to find Tyreek Hill. And this, to me – I think where you're going with this on making him think a little bit more yeah. is, hey, actually reading the defense, getting the ball to the yeah. open guy. And then there are going to be certain times where you go, I know Travis Kelce is going to win this one-on-one matchup, so that's where I'm going.
Bang. Right away. Yep. Right? Yeah. So, yeah, it's been interesting to watch. And you mentioned, hey, Mecole has his role. Year four, what is his role? No, I mean, I'm being serious.
I know.
Is he hurt? I see a guy that just really doesn't get it yet still.
I think there's a couple things here with that. I think there have been unfair expectations laid on him because they moved up in the draft in the second round to get him. If we remember back to that time, that was the year when the whole Tyreek Hill situation was going on in the offseason on things. And then, you know, I describe him this way. He's not a complete gadget player where you're going to run jet sweeps and, you know, some quick screens and things like that to it. But he's not a complete player. And so, you know, I don't think he tracks the ball all that great. He's certainly not going to go fight for a ball in a crowd. So he is what he is, which is a good receiver. But when you're
– that wasn't a ringing endorsement.
Yeah. But when you want to be a one or a two wide receiver, number one or number two, which I think he wants to be, you've got to do those things. And this is a contract year for him. It's an important year for him. I know that he's had a heel injury over the last couple of weeks that's bothering, and as a receiver, those suck on things. But he's just never been able to take that next step yet. And part of it, I think, is maybe just embracing – and, again, I'm not speaking for him or anybody I know I've talked to in this situation, but embracing the role that you have, right, as the number three guy. And making the most out of every single touch you have on that piece. But it does say some things to you when you trade Tyreek Hill away and then you make two free agent moves to create some extra depth as opposed to just one.
Right.
Of what they think.
There you go. So that speaks volumes in and of itself, I think. And it goes back to my point, you know, all this on the line, you know, wanting to be that number one guy or number two guy, having the opportunity presented to you to take advantage of that opportunity. My gosh, do you know how many people would die for that opportunity? And then on top of it, knowing it's a contract year and still not being able to pull it together. And that's why I come to the conclusion he still just doesn't get it yet.
Yeah, and I talk a lot about trust, right? The trust between a quarterback and a wide receiver. You get a one-on-one situation. There are certain matchups going in game plan-wise. You like this matchup better than the other because I know my guy's better than that guy. But the other guy on the defensive side is getting paid a lot of money too. He's a pretty darn good player. So if you get a 50-50 shot where it's like, hey, I'm going to trust that you're going to get open every single time, I don't think, you know, that Mahomes trusts that all the time with him. I really don't. And that's been – these are observations I've made over, you know, watching training camp. These are observations I watched over games. Last night, you know, I know there was – they ran kind of that double post with him running right through the seam. That Chris Collinsworth pointed out that they missed an easy touchdown. It's easy to look after the fact and be like, they missed an easy one here, reading eyes and different things, but he was open. You know, that could have been an opportunity. Did Patrick Mahomes just pre-snap figure, I'm not throwing the ball necessarily there, or he saw, you know, more of a matchup he liked? That was probably the case. Some of it's about you got to have the opportunity of the ball getting thrown to you also.
So a lot of people were talking after last night's game, the big rushing attack. You know, we got everybody involved there. We got Pacheco involved. We got Clyde involved and, you know, put a thumping on him. I'd like to have seen the over-under out here at Barstool Sports on Leonard Fournette getting 3 yards.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Unbelievable that they held him and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to only 3 yards rushing. And what a great job. We talked about the offensive line. But the two running backs, the Pacheco kid seems like – he's getting it a little bit. He's understanding the game. You know, it comes so fast when you're a rookie. Mm-hmm. Everything's new, and it's just a blur. But he seems to be, as Andy Reid said in his press conference today, growing right before our eyes.
Yeah. I mentioned this on the pregame show here on Sports Radio 810 on Sunday, yesterday morning. The vision for these running backs over the first 3 weeks has been lacking in terms of seeing the hole. And it's almost been – funny. It's not funny, but it's been funny at times when you watch Mahomes' reaction, like he's pointing where he should have run, you know, behind the zone scheme on things. And last night, you didn't see that. You saw good vision. And playing behind, in Pacheco's case as a rookie, it's going to take him some time to feel comfortable. The game's faster. He's playing against the best offensive line he's ever played behind,
right?
Okay, because he played at Rutgers on things. So That's a big part of this, is for him to trust that too, with those guys moving guys out of the way. And they have to move the line of scrimmage for that to happen. Last night they did that. Clyde Edwards-Helaire looked a lot better last night. The one thing I like about Pacheco is he's going to hit the hole.
Yeah.
He is going to hit the hole. And when he does and puts that foot in the ground, there is a burst there. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire ran that way last night too. We've seen him try to bounce a few things out too much outside lately, but last night – it was almost like he got the message from watching the rookie play a little bit like, hey, I better step this up a little bit. You know, we'll talk about opportunities, right? First-round pick, high expectations.
Right.
Like, this kid's going to take my starting job here and take care of it. But I like what they're going with by the committee side of things right now, running back-wise.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm anxious to see how this guy grows and how he matures. To me, there's no clear-cut number one back. You know, they're just trying to figure out how to use these guys and get the most out of them. You know, watching last night's game, too, is the trickidation, right? Mm-hmm. All the mastery. It's like smoke and mirrors, and it's crazy. Does it get crazy to a point where it is crazy, or is there going to come a time where you need to rely on some fundamentals to get things done?
Yeah, that's one thing I weigh hard on when I watch every single game with the Chiefs, because there are times, like, we saw the underhand pass again last night on the goal line. You know, how many times have we seen that? Almost once a game, it feels like. It still works. That's the crazy part to me, because they do all these different things.
Look, shifts and motions.
They do all these shifts and motions and eyes things to get all this smoke around all this stuff, but what's actually happened. And they did it last night on the quarterback sneak a little bit, which wasn't the quarterback sneak. It was a tight end sneak, but it's all window dressing to things.
Yeah.
There does come a point, I think, when you can get too cute. Now, when is that point? We'll probably find out in a couple weeks when we're all lamenting the fact that they got too cute down on the goal line or in a short yardage situation. Last night, they ran a lot of short yardage stuff where it was like some quick screens on things. They're all things that defenses have to prepare for, but – this offense is going to take it to another level if they can run the ball in short yardage, right? Yep. And it doesn't have to be third and two. It can be second and third, you know, second and one. Those types of situations, it gets magnified on third down. But if they can run the football in those situations and move the line of scrimmage, then all the tricky stuff that happens, all the window dressing can happen, is just kind of the cherry on top of everything because they can go to that if they need it.
Yeah, the guys kind of get excited about all that stuff too.
Yeah.
You know, but as I watched it, I asked myself the question every time I see it. Boy, you know, sometimes you just need some hard fundamentals to win things too.
Yeah.
And there comes that time when you need it. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I'm Bill Maz. This is the KC Legend Show. He is Mark Boerichter, former wide receiver from the Kansas City Chiefs. We are live at Barstool Sportsbook. We're right inside it here at Hollywood Casino. Come out and join us every Monday night. We'll have a different KC legend on with us. We're going to step away for a minute, but, Mark, when we come back, we're going to talk Raiders Week.
Oh, yes.
And get some of your stories about Raiders Week. This is Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, all right, all right. Welcome back to the KC Legends Show. We're live at Hollywood Casino inside the Barstool Sportsbook. And the sportsbook is packed. Look at people all over the kiosk getting ready for the game. Stop over here. Get yourself a pair of free sunglasses or a koozie. You look like you need a koozie. Want a free koozie? Come over here and get a koozie. Right here. Or fill out a little card. We'll have a raffle there. And raffle off a couple T-shirts and this great picture of Patrick Mahomes and his best friend, Travis Kelce. Great picture. Mark Boerichter joining us here on the KC Legends Show. And Mark, Raider Week this week. And, you know, we just talked about the emotions of the game, what happened in Indianapolis, a flat letdown, how they pulled it back together, an emotional high, great performance down in Tampa Bay. And now they got a couple tough games coming here. You got another one of those games. Here's the Raiders. They just finally got their first win. They are the pesky Raiders, and you're looking at another one of those games. You've got to get ready and stay ready.
You do, and it's a divisional opponent, and you know this, Billy, but it's the Raiders, right? At the end of the day, the records go out the window, and any divisional game, specifically now when you've won the AFC West as many times in a row that the Chiefs have, you are going to get everybody's best shot.
Monday night.
And it's Monday Night Football. And, you know, the Raiders are coming off a win against Denver. And this Raiders team easily could be 2-2 also right now because, you know, that Arizona game, they went to overtime
crazy on
things and stuff. So they're finding their footing a little bit. New coach and Josh McDaniels. Had to deal with all the stuff they did a year ago off the field and, of course, with the Gruden situation. You bring in Devontae Adams to boost your receiving core, to play with his college quarterback, who they've looked off the first couple weeks, but they seem to get it back this past week. And I know that defensive end, Max Crosby, is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
for the Raiders as well.
And they play good defense. And it goes back to what we were talking about, the Indianapolis game, because Tampa Bay, and now it's the Raiders. And then the weekend after that, you know who's coming to town? The Buffalo Bills.
The Buffalo Bills, yes.
And so everybody, you know, in the big picture of the AFC, and this is what everybody talks about. The two best teams in football right now in the AFC are the Bills and the Chiefs.
Yes.
And human nature, again, it's tough to focus and get ready each and every week without, you know, these thoughts getting in your head and thinking ahead, thinking about what's coming, and thinking about other things other than the task at hand. And the Raiders are one of those teams, you know, they don't go away.
Right.
You know, and that's the best way I can say it. Mm-hmm. Just one of those flies that are always on you or around you. They're pesky. They won't go away. And, you know, they've given the Kansas City Chiefs fits, you know, battles down to the end all the time. Really close games.
Yeah, the history of all these games, outside of a little bit of stretch there, they've always been close. Always been close. During my time of playing, they were always close. You know, it just seemed that you knew you were going to be in for a battle. And the other thing is, you knew you weren't going to feel good after that battle, after these games.
So
against the Raiders, it takes its toll physically on you because you knew it was going to be that type of game. And now we're starting, quote, the, you know, now that there's 17 games, you can't really divide the season into quarters anymore, you know, type of thing of four-game stretches.
Right.
But you're starting that second quarter. This second four games is an important stretch of the season because you're going to see some teams that started out 0-2, 1-3, that all of a sudden win three straight here and are back in the mix. You're going to see some teams fall off. And this is an important stretch for the Kansas City Chiefs. You've got the Las Vegas Raiders coming here on Monday night. You mentioned the Buffalo Bills come here the following Sunday.
Yep.
And then you go to San Francisco, and then you got Tennessee at home. So this four-game stretch against three AFC opponents, which conference record comes into play in playoff seeding, is a big stretch. But you can't overlook the Raiders here Monday night. You got to take care of that one first because then you've beaten the two teams in your division that you've played so far. So you got a game up on all of them regardless on that side of things. So this is an important little stretch here, but these next 2 to 3 games are going to define for me right now where the Chiefs are. You know, I think they're obviously a really, really good team. Things vary from year to year. We can go back to this little stretch of games last year, and their defense didn't look very good.
Right.
And there were a lot of people like, this thing is lost.
Yeah.
And I said then, I'm like, Chiefs fans need to chill out, and people on
Relax.
Twitter thought I was crazy. But a lot can happen over the course of the season. And you and I were talking about this before the show started, all the injuries that are happening around the National Football League right now and major injuries to guys. And this past week you saw Randy Gregory go down from Denver, and you're seeing guys go down all over the place on things. A lot can change, and you know, you got to knock on wood and hope that these Chiefs stay healthy here. But the Willie Gay suspension was a wrinkle that happened, you know, on things. And so this next four-game stretch here, when you start hitting these next, really the next – eight through this middle part of the season is where you either elevate your game and take it to another level and really assert your fact that you're one of the best teams in the AFC, or you can easily go the opposite direction. But it starts Monday night against the Las Vegas Raiders because you can't look ahead to the Buffalo game without getting this one done first.
And when you talk about the Raiders, it seems that they got really back on track with Josh Jacobs.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, running the football, yep.
They started pounding him a little bit more, getting downhill. And that's, you know, he was one of those guys that they did beat you up.
Yeah.
When you got done playing them, you were beat up as a defense.
You were, and I think Derek Carr is a better quarterback than people give him credit for a lot of times. But they got to do it in a way where they run the football first and then the play action game with him and then let him hit Darren Waller, then let him, you know, work to Davante Adams. I think where the Raiders have gotten in trouble before in the past is trying to let Derek Carr do too much out there on that side of things. So the Raiders have always been built back to Hal Davis's days on physicality and intimidation and everything along those lines. And Josh McDaniel has come from that New England piece. I think he's learned from his time in Denver. A lot of stories came out this past week.
Right.
Some craziness that happened. It was a long time ago. I don't think he's trying to be Bill Belichick. I think that's who he was trying to be then. We'll see how it ultimately works out for them. But they're still trying to find their identity as a team also, right? It's a new offense for them. It's trying to find that identity. And through the first four games here, you know pretty close at this point who we are, right, as a team, or – hey, this is what we truly do best, and this is what our identity is going to be moving forward. And they seem to get back on track with that last week.
You know, for me, I'm fine with having Josh McDaniels and Nathaniel Hackett in our division.
I'm with you.
Nothing wrong with that, right?
No.
At this point in time.
You have a second-year first-time head coach, second year in Los Angeles with the Chargers. You got a first-time head coach in Denver. And you've got a head coach on his second opportunity 10 years later.
Right.
Now, in your division. I'll take those odds since we're sitting in the sports book on Andy Reid all day long.
That's right. Keep that train going that way. Let me ask you a tough question. A lot of people, the talk of the NFL is about Tua.
Yep.
And how that all played out. I don't think there was a viewing eye that watched the game in Buffalo that said, you know, that's a back injury. Anybody that's played the game knows immediately what happens when you're concussed.
Mm-hmm.
The dizziness, the drops, when you're out, your hands clench in different manners. Your arms might stick straight out.
Yep.
We know. We've seen it. We've been through it. But I don't think there was anybody that even hasn't been through it that didn't know what had happened to him on that play. And it had nothing to do with a back injury.
Yeah.
And then what transpires after that into something that could have been, you know, really devastating, it's hard to understand how this can happen in a day and age when you're talked to and told in a statement written by an attorney that the health and protection of our players is of number one importance.
Yeah. I'll say this, that I've seen people go down with a back injury where you have, like, back spasms.
Sure.
And you know this, right? Like, all of a sudden it can cripple you a little bit. But that's not what happened in that first game with Tua. You know, a guy goes down then, it's like you're going down your knees. Like, he couldn't physically stand up. And the fact that they turned around and played him on Thursday night on a short week was absolutely malpractice on things. And you also know this, Billy. Sometimes you got to protect the player from the player.
Absolutely.
Right?
100%.
Which is a big portion of this also.
Just like it's your child.
But the problem I have with it is that in this day and age, with all the science we have out there, with all the studies that have been done, that it was even a conversation for him to play on Thursday night. And the reason I say that I have a problem with that is because the National Football League can say that they care about the health and safety of players. But you can't say that and allow that to happen where Tua plays, not just that he had another injury and a concussion on Thursday night, but he played 4 days later, 5 days later, when you've added a 17th game to your season, and every team has to play a Thursday night game. You're turning around and playing 4 or 5 days later every time. And they'll tell you, well, on the back end, you're getting a little rest on the back end. I don't care.
Yeah.
I would much rather, like the Chiefs did, to be honest with you, and you may feel differently than this, but as a player, I would much rather have that Thursday night game like the Chiefs did early in the season than have to play it later on.
No, I remember those Thursday night games were tough. They're brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, it took everything. It took every minute of that seven-day week to get ready to go again on Sunday.
And you can't control this portion of it, but Miami in that first game on that Sunday, their defense had 94 snaps. 94 just for the defense alone, and then they had to turn around and play on Thursday. Now, you can't change it in the middle of the season, obviously, and the game dictated that's the way it went. But you're asking defensive players to play close to 100 snaps, which is absurd anyway. It's an absurd amount, which part of you tell you, get off the field in some capacity. But you can't speak out of both sides of your mouth, I guess is where I'm going with this, if you're the National Football League. And a few years ago when they implemented some of this stuff on, you know, the concussion protocol, it felt like every week there were guys in the concussion protocol. And it's like, okay, how long are they going to be in it? Well, so they made some tweaks to it, and now they're looking to tweak it again. But it's for the best interest of the players. And I would rather see them expand the rosters, you know, to 57, 60 guys maybe or something, that you can actually truly protect a player from himself and you can protect them for their own personal safety on things, especially when you're talking about a head and neck injury.
It's hard to do when you're talking about a multi-billion-dollar industry that is everybody's jobs. It comes down to one thing.
Yeah.
Wins and losses.
Yes.
And so it's hard to serve two masters.
Yep.
And you know, I go back to training camp when they wore those concussion helmets,
yep,
those bubble wrap things around their head. You know, and I don't know, maybe that'll be something that gets implemented here at some time where everybody has to wear them during the game. But I do know that when you do get slammed down on the back of your head on that turf, whether it be grass field or the artificial turf, in our day it was like cement with carpet. But when you do hit the back of your head on there, it's a knockout.
Yeah.
It's a complete knockout. And we hope for the best for Tua. And we hope for something good to come out of this from everybody's yeah. behalf.
Because you know this too. Like, how many times do you get your bell rung, right? Then you're like, quote, got your bell rung.
Yeah.
And you're out there like, oh, look at the cobwebs. Yeah. Looking at it, you're like, I just got to shake this off for a second. Like, it happens. It happens all the time.
Yeah, it does happen more
than
people know. And
I don't want to see situations like this happen on national television for a reason that didn't need to happen. So that other kids don't want to play football, or their parents don't want to let them play football because of that, you know, because of how that was handled.
Right.
Not because of the risk, but because of how that was handled.
Well, I think a lot of that has already happened.
It has.
Actually, you know, it's just people have been made aware of some of the harm that goes along with the head trauma.
Yep.
And it's interesting, and I just hope that something good comes out of it and that he's healthy in the long run. But, you know, tonight, we got a big one coming up tonight, right here on Monday Night Football. The L.A. Rams and the San Francisco 49ers in San Francisco. Mark, you've got Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford teeing it up against Kyle Shanahan and Joey Garoppolo.
Yeah.
Yeah, this Joey Garoppolo story in and of itself is something that you could just talk about for another hour. I mean, here's a guy that's done everything you can do in football except win the Super Bowl and was replaced and basically blackballed from the league for trade purposes.
Yeah.
And here they're signing him to a new contract.
It's an interesting situation, tonight's game, because you got Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, who are good friends.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in the Washington organization. We'll just call it that because it's been three names since they were there. But the Jimmy Garoppolo situation is weird because, you know, he had shoulder surgery in the offseason. I think that's the one thing that sidelined him, so teams, you know, didn't come after him trade-wise. I also think the 49ers were asking too much for him. And they had a quarterback they drafted last year in Trey Lance who hasn't played a lot of football, honestly, right, in terms of starting games.
He's going to miss a whole other year.
He's banged up last year, now he's going to miss a whole other year this year. And
it's like 3 years.
And injuries happen, as we know, and freak injuries happen. But right before the season started, they signed Jimmy Garoppolo this new deal where it's a no-trade clause as a part of it, right? He takes a little bit of a pay cut on the thing. No-trade clause. Like, he had all the leverage in the world, and they gave it to him. It's the other thing to it. And now, it just, to me, the whole thing was weird because it made for an awkward situation, I would have thought, if I was in that organization. Like, Trey Lance is our guy, but you're not really fully into being Trey Lance as your guy yet because, oh, we're going to go ahead and put a no-trade clause in for Garoppolo and redo his contract so he stays here. It's like you got this major insurance policy sitting over top of you here when you don't really trust the guy that's there. And to, I guess, the Niners' credit in this situation, injury happens to Trey Lance to go back to Jimmy Garoppolo, but it's going to be interesting to me to see the dynamics that happen here over the next couple of weeks because we're only a week into this whole thing now, right, with him back as the starter. And so in his case as a player, he's got an opportunity to really earn some money now. And it's not because he's getting these extra incentives back and redoing the deal, but it's where's his career going to go from here? Because I think it also includes a no franchise tag as part of this new deal also. So they can't franchise him. So he's going to be a free agent after this year's over with.
Well, it's interesting. We're watching ESPN out here at the sports book, and Steve and Susie and Robert and Alex and Larry Fitzgerald all, well, not so fast. I thought they all took San Fran. But Alex and Larry took San Fran, and RG3 is going with the Rams. Who do you like in this tonight?
I like the Rams. I do. I'm not just saying
reigning
that
champs.
Yeah, I'm not just saying that because of the Super Bowl champs. I think, you know, they've got a little bit of a Super Bowl hangover, I thought, especially the first couple of weeks of the season. But they are so talented overall. They got a great defense, and Matthew Stafford's in a situation that he's on the same page with Sean McVay. And when you got receivers like they do, it's in this day and age, it's hard to defend that.
Yeah, it is dangerous, and Stafford is really just still playing amazing. What a great story this is. So the points are plus two for the Rams.
Yeah.
49ers are at home, minus two.
It's a pick-em game.
They've won seven out of the last 10 meetings. Rams took them in the playoffs to go on to win the Super Bowl. They've had heck of a battle the last 3 years here for sure. It's going to be another good one tonight. Mark, I want to thank you for coming out and joining me out here at the Hollywood Casino. We're here every single Monday night right here at the Barstool Sportsbook. Look at you guys having fun over there at the kiosks. Get your bet on. There you go. Outstanding. We'll be here next week. I'm Bill Maz. This is a KC Legend Show. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.